goodness. Okay. So Stephen, so tell us how this all started. So you grew up in Pakistan, is that correct?
Yeah, like I was like in Pakistan all my life. So it all started actually. I began to doubt Islam when I was in my intermediate, like in high school, and all started that time. So when I was in my high school, I was like a kind of atheist, and I was like, I don't believe in God, but I could not say it because in Pakistan, if you say these kind of things, maybe people will kill you or maybe they will beat you or something like that. So I don't say anything like that. But like in my high school, I was like a kind of atheist at that time. So all started at that time, and then it becomes really.
So you studied in high school, you were an atheist, but you're not atheist now, you're a Christian now.
Yeah, now I'm a Christian. I was an atheist back then when I was in high school. And when I was in high school, then like there was a time period I become a good Muslim, like a Muslim who prays like 5 times a day, and like I do etikaf and do like roza, and I went to Hajj,
So
so I
it's
become a Haji. And
Oh, you even went for Hajj. Wow. So itikaf, for people that don't know, is basically you stay inside the mosque for like a certain amount of nights, especially in Ramadan, the last 10 nights of Ramadan. And then
yes.
roza means to fast. So you're talking about the fasting and all of that. So you were actually quite a believing, so you became a believing Muslim. How did you end up from atheism to become a believing Muslim? What convinced you to become religious?
Yeah, like at that time, I was like, when I was in this high school, I was like having doubts about like, is there God or not? But then, like, truly, like, suddenly, like, I thought, yeah, there must be a God, and there must be someone who created this whole creation. And I began to study like different religions, and Islam was my religion from my parents, so I studied it like deeply. And I was convinced that yeah, maybe there is a God. When I become like when I get inside it, I become like crazy inside it. Like I used to sleep a lot. I used to sleep a lot. Maybe I
How old were you
yeah.
when this happened, when you became religious?
This was like 15 or 16 years old,
Ah,
maybe. Yeah.
wow, okay.
Yeah. So I become like too devout Muslim. I went to Hajj. Become a Haji. And actually, yeah, at this time, I was like, when I was doing Hajj, I used to like think, why the Muslims, like, why we throw these stones on the sculpture of Satan, like, I don't know, in Shaitan,
Yeah, Shaitan, yeah.
we threw the stones in Shaitan. It's like the house of the Shaitan. It's like a big pillar
Yeah.
of a white. And like I was thinking, oh, does it really affect Shaitan? And I was like thinking, and these things come to my mind. But my family was with me, and I tried to ask my father, but my father said, "You are in a holy place. Don't ask this question."
So
So I said, "Okay."
even back then, you were actually having like you were trying to
Question.
reconcile, yeah, like you're having questions, which is normal, like a lot of Muslims or maybe all Muslims have this, but you were actually trying to find out like, well, how does this make sense, right?
Yeah, how did that make sense? Like, for example, a Jew people, because I was a little bit lighter at the time, so some people, they pick me up. They pick me up so that I can kiss the black stone. I can kiss the black stone. So they pick me up so I can kiss. So I also kissed the black stone. So I was like thinking about all this stuff, like, why is that so? So when I came back, I started reading, and I realized that it's actually Arab pagan culture. It's Arab pagan. It actually is not monotheism. It's like maybe polytheism, maybe, or I don't know. But it was not monotheism. It was not the religion that Abraham or Moses or Jesus told us. But it was a religion beside that. So
I remember
yeah.
hearing on the radio recently that there was a controversy because the Pope, you know, he has a ring that people kiss, and then he actually pulled
Oh
it
yeah.
away. And then they asked him why he pulled it away. He said he didn't want people to get like germs or something like that.
Yeah, I know that that's crazy stuff. I don't believe in that. I'm a Protestant actually,
Okay, you're
so
Protestant. Okay.
I'm a Protestant. So Angela, like in Saudi Arabia, there is a place called Wadi Jin. I don't know, maybe you know about that.
No, I heard of it, but I don't know the details.
Wadi Jin, like when I was there in Saudi Arabia at that time. So I did not know about that. But what they do is like a car. If you do the neutral, the
Yeah.
gearbox is on neutral,
Yeah.
the car will move away.
Okay.
But the road is flat, but the car will move.
Okay.
So the people there believe that it's jinn, it's the devil. So my uncle and my father, they said, "Oh, see this is a miracle. You see, in Saudi Arabia, it's a miracle. Wadi Jinn, the car is going by itself, no person is inside the car, and the car is moving." So I had some doubts, and I came back, I came to Pakistan, and I tried to search on Wikipedia and Google why that happens, and I came to know that actually it's a hill, it's downside, but it seems that it's
Yeah.
like it's flayed, but it's not flayed, it's down.
Yeah,
So if
that would be a pretty funny proof for jinns, like some sort of natural phenomenon that behaves consistently, right? Because you would expect if it's jinns, it would be like, inconsistent things because there's some sort of creature that's doing something. It wouldn't be like it always you know, it reminds me of that Ouija box, Ouija board, Ouija board, where you hold it and it moves. It feels like it's moving, but you have a bunch of people holding this thing, but actually it's
Yeah.
very, very like small movements get like, emphasized, and it feels like it's moving by itself, but actually it's just the people not realizing that they're moving the board. So, they think it's devils. You heard of this Ouija board? It's popular in Canada and America.
I know about it. I watch it
Yeah.
in movies.
Oh, okay.
So actually, yeah, so I just want to say that about like Muslims, particularly like Pakistani Muslims, they have like this superstitions, superstitions, and they have like they believe in jinns and they believe in black magic because Muhammad, the Prophet Muhammad, he himself told them to believe so because
Yeah.
there was black magic in the Quran and there was jinns, so
Yes.
there are two worlds,
Yes.
jinn and ins,
Yes.
the man and jinn.
Yes.
So they all believe this. But like I was curious and I did not believe in this, so I got a chance. So that like I wanted to study medicine. I wanted to become a doctor. So I got my admission in a Chinese university and I went there. So when I was there in China, I really got freedom. Like I don't have any pressure from my family, and I was free to do everything. And I started, I started reading a lot. I started reading like Quran and criticizing Quran and all these things. So at that time, like I was really free. And so this part of the story, like this was the starting time when I became a Christian.
Okay.
Yeah, this was the time I'm a Christian. There was a guy. He was American. He was from Mississippi. I call him my brother. His name was Hunter. His name is Hunter. So Hunter Johnson, and he was teaching. He was a teacher at the university where I was studying medicine. So he was like an English teacher for Chinese, but I was studying medicine. Like the department was separate. So I became his friend. I became his friend, and he said to me, "Why don't you come and speak? Like, why don't you read and like study Bible with us?" And I said, okay, yes, why not? I would like to study that. And every Sunday I used to go at his apartment and we used to study Bible. And the more I read about the Bible, I figured it out that the stories that were in the Quran that when I was a kid, I used to study the Quran, that was like totally different from the stories that were in the Bible. Just for example, like the story of the Adam and the story of Noah, like I don't know, in Arabic it's Nuh alayhi salam, and the story of Suleiman alayhi salam, Solomon, and even the story of Yusuf, like he
Beautiful.
was so, how do you say, beautiful, that the girl was. So all these stories, like the Quran and about the Dhulqarnain, and like so many stories, and about the bee, the honey bee. I don't know how do you say in Arabic, but it's like a
Nahal.
Bee, honeybee.
Nahal.
Yes, Sura al-Nahl. So, yeah. Yes. So I tried to figure it out, but the Bible was really different. And one thing that inspired me about Christianity was that because in Islam, when you know, like, there was an adulterous woman,
mm-hmm.
like, who did, sorry, who did adultery, I'm sorry. Who did adultery, and Muhammad, like, set him to punish her. So, but in Christianity, when you see, like, Jesus, there was the same situation, and there was a woman who did adultery, and Jesus said, hit the stones
mm-hmm.
with the hands that have not sinned. Like, for example, that, like, this was the difference between Islam and Christianity, where Jesus says that you cannot even hurt that woman because your hands have sinned.
Mm-hmm.
So you hurt this if you have not sinned through your hands. So all the Jews there, they know they have sinned, so they did not hurt her. But in Islam, we know that there's nothing like that. If you do adultery, you have to bring four evidence, like four shahada.
Four witnesses.
And
yeah.
then you're stoning to death for women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, I do think that stoning adulterers is, like, obviously quite barbaric and definitely not something we want to do in the modern world. Most of the hudud punishments, chopping off the hands, stoning adulterers, lashing for fornication, none of those actually really fit in the modern world. And they belong, you know, even we do find these things in the Old Testament as well, where, you know, stoning adulterers and stuff like that. And, you know, thankfully, in Christianity, none of this is applicable anymore, because obviously in Judaism and Islam, they're still considered valid rulings.
Yes.
Although I don't know,
there
I
was
don't
a,
know Judaism. I don't know too much about it. Yeah.
There was a friend of mine, he asked me, okay, you tell me, what is Islam? And I said to him, okay, Islam is nothing, but it's Judaism and Arab paganism combined.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all. You know, it's Judaism, like 50% of the things are from Judaism, and 50% of the things are from Arabic pagan culture and
yeah.
pagan religion.
So
it's all.
So I definitely agree that it's definitely better not to stone adulterers and stuff like that. One of my friends was mentioning to me that the story of Jesus pardoning the adulteress, it's not actually a true story. It was added later to the Gospels. So for me as an atheist, this is like one of the challenges I have with believing in any religion, right? Because if someone is coming and saying, you know, like, don't do these things because you guys are sinful, I would say, well, that's interesting, because if there's laws, like, the law, either the law should be changed so it makes sense, or the law shouldn't be there. Not that only, like, sinless people can do it, because you don't want, like, you still need the laws of the land, right? So if the laws are bad, you should change the laws, but it still has to be a consistent, you know, application of the laws. So let's talk a little bit more. So you converted to Christianity, and then this was in China?
Yeah, when I was studying medicine, and I was like in the first year, in the end of the first year, second semester. So I became a Christian. I got baptized, and actually this was one of the happiest day in my life, and
mm-hmm.
one of the, like, you can say, saddest day. Like, it also ruined my life and somehow, because my family, when they came to know about this, that I left Islam, the first thing they did was, like, they stopped giving me money for my study. So they stopped it, and they said, okay, no more studies.
Wow.
Can you hear
yeah,
me?
Yeah, yeah, I can hear you. So your family cut you off because you left Islam.
Hello?
Yeah, I can still hear you. Can you not hear me anymore?
Yeah, I can hear, but
okay.
it's saying the poor connection. I don't know.
It's okay.
Okay.
Just continue.
Okay.
It's fine. So they cut you off financially because you left Islam? So your dad stopped sending you money?
Yeah, he stopped sending me money. Like, he was paying for my tuition fees in my university. And
mm-hmm.
When he knew that I left Islam, he just stopped the money for my... And he said, like, okay, we don't need you to study anymore. Just come back to Pakistan. But at that time, like, I knew that, like, if I go back, they will maybe punish me, they will maybe hurt me, and they don't want me to be a Christian or atheist or whatever. They don't want me that. So they just wanted me to that I should not leave Islam. So like that time I was like really worried, and I tried to like talk with my friends and my brother, his brother Hunter, and he really supported me and he really helped me. And at the same time, like I decided to marry a girl. She's Chinese, like my wife, and I married her. So when my family actually knew that now I'm married and now I'm not a Muslim, so their anger become like double.
Oh, wow.
So they said, like, my father said to me, okay, you left Islam and now you are marrying a Chinese girl and she's not a Muslim, it's haram, all this stuff. So I said to him, it doesn't matter to me, I'm not a Muslim and she's not a Muslim, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was going really great. But like, you know, Muslims, I don't trust Muslims now because Muslims, mostly they lie a lot. I know that they lie a lot. So my father actually lied to me. And he said, like, okay, he actually, you know, in America, they say, like, booby trap. You know, booby trapped. Honey trap, maybe. I don't know how do you say that in America. But it's like he said to me, like, okay, I want to see my grandson. And I want to see my, I want to see your wife. And I want to see you. All of you come back to Pakistan. And I will accept you. I don't care whatever your religion is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Christian or if you're Muslim or Hindu, it doesn't matter.
Mm.
So I thought, okay, my father has changed and it's really good. I thank to God, and I bring my wife and my son back to Pakistan. And oh, from my surprise, I just knew that when I arrived there, they take my passport and they take my wife's passport and said, okay, you guys are here in this house. You should not go outside. And they house arrested me, and I was like, I was shocked, and I said to my father, this is cheating, and he said, this is not cheating, I'm your father, I can do whatever I want. But I said, no, this is cheating, you lied to me, you said that you will accept me as I am, and you will accept my wife. Actually, yeah, he was not even saying, like, you should leave Christianity, and he was saying, you should leave your wife too.
Wow.
You should leave your children too. So it was like you know, crazy for me. I think, well, how can a person say like this? And he's my father. He said, you can leave your son, and he can get a girl for me, a young girl. Like he said, like maybe 15 years old. And he said, I can get a girl for you for 15 years old from Pakistan. And I said, no, I don't want that. If I really wanted that, why should I marry her?
Yeah.
And why? That's crazy, actually. But he was trying to lure me, you know. He was trying to, like, let me come back to him. But somehow I tried to escape there. Some friends and my mother, actually, she helped me a little bit. And somehow I tried to manage to get out of from there. But at the same time, my mother, like when I was there, he was saying, like, Islam is the true religion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, you went to Pakistan because your dad called you on the phone, and your dad told you, you know what, you welcome back. You know, I know you're not Muslim, but I accept you, and I'm willing to, you know, come back, come with your daughter. You know, I haven't met your son, I haven't met your wife. So he told you that if you come back,
yep,
I will take care of you. Is that what he said?
Yeah, exactly. That's what he said.
Oh,
and but goodness. It was not true. He did taqiyya, you know. He was like using Islam, and he sent me. He said, "Allah, it's halal." You know, he said it's halal.
It's halal, so, to do what? To lie?
Yeah, he said, like, you can lie with your son or you can lie with anybody if it's good for him. So he thinks it's good for me.
So he's saying it's okay. It was okay to be dishonest to you because he. So basically, he didn't want you to go to hell. So he thought by tricking you, you know, even though he's doing a small sin, which is lying, he's getting a bigger sin, which is you going to hell. That's what
yes,
he's thinking.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Now, unfortunately,
yeah.
that doesn't make any sense because you can't force someone to convert to Islam, right? Like, how can you force somebody to be Muslim?
Yeah.
Either, like, if you don't believe in Allah, you don't believe in Allah. Your mind was opened. You read some things. You're not... The only way to make you a Muslim would be if he sat down and convinced you, right?
Yeah, actually, yes. Actually, he tried to convince me, you know. I want to share a story with you. He said, okay, ask me any questions. I said, okay, you can ask me any questions. He said, okay, if I ask you questions, you cannot answer them. So he challenged me. My father challenged me and he said, okay, I'm going to ask you questions. I said, okay, ask me questions. He said, okay, how in the Quran it says like 1400 years ago, it says like in the land, beneath the land, there are treasures and beneath the sky, on the sky, there are treasures. So I replied to him, he gave me an example. He said, how did Muhammad know, or how did Quran say that 1400 years back that there was oil in the earth?
Mm-hmm.
So I said him, actually, oil was really present before Islam, and we used to use it.
Yeah.
It was like black oil, and people used to use it like when they were doing wars. They
yeah.
used to make the stones black and they put the fire and they use it.
Yeah.
So I said to him, it was really, and actually when the Quran says that beneath the earth there are treasures, so the gold was coming beneath from the earth, the silver was coming from there, and oil was coming from there. So what is the science behind it? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And when Quran says about like skies, it says about like raining, how it rains. How it is rained.
Yeah.
So I said it doesn't matter. Like Muhammad, he used to see the surroundings. He used to see, oh, it's raining, and then he added up a verse in the Quran. Oh, see how it's raining. God
yeah.
is great. Allahu Akbar. Then he sees something coming out of the surface of the earth, and he say, oh, Allahu Akbar, Subhanallah, and this thing is amazing. Allah is great.
Yeah.
And I said this doesn't make any sense, and there's no science in Quran, actually. There's no science. I don't think any word or anything you can get from Quran, it's all lies, it's all deception and all stories.
So,
and even they are wrong.
So the Quran would contain like descriptions based on the understanding of the time, the people at the time. So obviously, like the seventh sen, Galenic medicine or whatever, that's what we find in the Quran. So I wouldn't
yeah.
say it's all wrong. There could be a few things in there that are correct, but it would be coincidental, because it would be whatever they knew at the time, right? So that's basically, like, for example, mountains as pegs, that has an element of truth to it, but when it says, you know, it keeps it from shaking, that doesn't really seem
yeah.
to be true, but it could be argued.
I'm gonna answer you this, like, if you say, okay, there are some things that are right in Quran, but Muslims don't believe this. Muslims said that everything that is right in the Quran, that is written in the Quran,
yeah.
is right.
Yeah.
And if something is wrong, it means the thing is wrong, the Quran is not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, Muslims say that this Quran was not revealed for 7th century, it was revealed for all the centuries.
Yeah, so I have an interesting question.
This problem.
How did your mom
yeah.
react? So you talked about your dad, you know, lying and bringing you back in order to kind of save you, because he really didn't want you to go to hell. But what about your mom? How was your mom's reaction to all this?
My mother was like, she was like, she's like a kind of liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I have a cough.
It's okay.
So she's kind of liberal, and she like accepted me. She said it doesn't matter.
Nice.
She said me that okay, do whatever you want, believe in whatever you want, but don't say anything against Islam in front of me. I said okay, yeah, it doesn't make sense. I will not say that.
Yeah.
And I will keep my things in my heart.
So that's nice. So
but
here,
you know,
so here we
yeah,
have an example
yeah.
of, like, you know, both Pakistani Muslims. One of them, you know, is like. And we didn't even talk about some of the other things your dad said to you. But your mom, on the other hand, so in my case, like, my family is very liberal. and they all accepted me, right? So, and I'm, but we're not from Pakistan, we're from Kenya. We grew up in Kenya. My parents were born in Kenya. My grandparents were born in Kenya. So we were in Kenya. So Kenya is different from Pakistan, right? So there's different social influences, but they were still Muslim. But obviously Islam is a little bit different than the Islam you guys were following. And my dad's side is obviously Ismaili, but I'm not even talking about my dad's family. I'm talking about my mom's family. So what else happened then after that? Like, so they trapped you in Pakistan. At least your dad did. What happened?
Yeah, he trapped me, and he used to bring me every time to the mosque, and he tried to consult with a sheikh, like the alim, you know. Alim is like a scholar, mufti. So he tried to ask mufti, what if my son left Islam, what should I do? The mufti said, him, you should kill him right away. So, so my father, he really, at that time, he wants to kill me. He said, okay, if you don't accept Islam, and if you don't say La ilaha illallah and Muhammadur Rasulullah, I will kill you right away. So at that time, I was really worried, and I don't have any other way. I just said, okay, I'm a Muslim. But in my heart, I was not, and I did not believe it. But because of fear, I just said that because I don't have any other way. I have to save my baby. I have to save my wife. I have some responsibility. So somehow I tried to manage to get out from there and came here in China. But my father is still mad at me, and he always threatens me. Like, he always say that he will contact with the ISI and the mullahs, you know, the scholars, and they will kill me because I am apostate, and I defend Muhammad, and I'm defaming him and defaming his family. So they will kill me. So actually, I don't care about them. If they really want to kill me, maybe they can kill me. My whole point was I should bring my message to the people, so people should know that this kind of religion, like Islam, I don't have any problem with other religions like Buddhism or Hinduism or Christianity or other religions, you know. Most of them, they don't really cause, you know, disturbance or... But this religion, Islam, it really causes trouble, mainly the Sunni Islam and the Wahhabi Islam. They are it makes a father enemy of the son. Like, father wants to kill his own son, and his own son wants to kill his father, and it's crazy. There's no love, you know, there's no love between father and son, and between his grandson, and between, you know, every family member. It's like you against me, and because he's a Muslim.
Yeah, so that's definitely an unfortunate way of them applying the religion, because I know when I was a Muslim, I thought about this, because one day I was in the masjid, I was probably 18 years old, something like that, and...
Your voice is
breaking
your
up.
Your voice is... Hello?
Yeah, hi. So I was saying, one day when I was young, I was in the mosque. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, now it's okay.
Okay. So I was saying, there was an atheist guy that was in the mosque with me, and I was like, he told me he's atheist. And I was like, what? Why are you in the mosque? You're atheist. He's like, oh, my dad makes me come for tafsir, right? I was like, okay.
Okay,
interesting. But he was annoyed. Like, he didn't want to be there. He was a young kid, probably 14, 15 years old. Anyways. So then I was thinking, what if my kids wanted to leave Islam? And I was thinking, and I always told myself, if anybody in my family leaves Islam, I will help them. I will not kick them out. I will treat them kindly. And I will say, listen, we love you. Islam is the best. We want you to go to Jannah, but we're not going to hurt you, right? We want you to come back to us. We're not going to be like, I'm going to kill you, or I'm going to kick you out. Because how is that going to convince anybody? Like, it's so stupid. But it's unfortunate that people, you know, and especially like you said, that the mullahs in Pakistan are actually encouraging this, because they're the ones that have the responsibility of telling the people, you need to bring him back with love, not kill him. And but unfortunately, there is some things in the Islamic religion that are interpreted to that you should kill apostates, right? But of course, even then, I mean, that's to. From my perspective, what he said was wrong, because you cannot kill a family member for leaving Islam, but the government has to deal with it. They have to, you know, the state has to, you know, ask you questions and say, are you really a disbeliever? Do you truly not believe in Islam? And then you have a chance to repent and come back to Islam, right? So you know, I feel so sad for you that you had to go through this. It's such an unfortunate situation, especially, you know, you someone that loves, that you would think should love you, you know, your own father. And you know, I speak to another ex-Muslim from Pakistan. His name is Abdullah Gondal. And he told me that he has the same challenges with his father, that it always comes back to like conflict about religion. And I told him, like, maybe, you know, one day he will understand, maybe. And just don't talk about religion, because my dad and me, we couldn't talk about religion. Yes. Like, he was Ismaili and I was Sunni, and we just couldn't talk about it. So every time I brought it up, he was a mature one. He's like, I understand, you think I'm wrong, but let's not talk about it. Let's talk about something else. And so we avoided that topic altogether, because it was a bad topic for us, right? So I don't know, like, Pakistan is very unfortunate that so many people and the Muslims scholars
Pakistan I want to add something here. Like, if you think about like Islam, actually what I heard from you is like Islam is really not the problem, but the mullahs are a problem, right? But I have some different view on that, because if you see really Muhammad, he was that kind of person. He was not really a peaceful person. He used to do ghazwas.
Yeah, yeah.
He used to kill mushrikun and kafir, all these people. So the problem is, who is interpreting the Quran right? So Ismailis are interpreting the Quran right, or Sunnis or Wahhabis or who? But for me, those Muslims like you, like your father or maybe your family, they are like good Muslims who don't follow these things. Mm-hmm. But there are like, they are good people, but they are not good Muslims. The good Muslims are those who really follow the traditions of Muhammad, and they are really causing the trouble.
So,
and because they are following.
Yeah,
Muhammad, yes.
I wouldn't. So, well, first of all, I don't see Islam as just one thing. I see it as like a kind of varied expression of one's faith that, you know, based on the, obviously, the religious text, but not just the religious text, but obviously the interpretation of the scholars and the 1400 year history that has built up to religion to be what it is today, right? So I don't say that it has nothing to do with Islam. Obviously, there is awful Islamic texts that say that you should do these things. And obviously, the way that the mullahs in Pakistan are interpreting Islam is they're actually saying themselves that you should be killed, right? Which is unfortunate. But yeah. my only thing is that it's not necessarily the case that whoever takes the hadith black and white without any context, without looking in at like whether this should be applied even today. Because some scholars would say this is the law of the land, meaning like the government needs to do it. So even if Islam says, let's say Islam officially said that you cannot leave the religion, you have to be killed, still there's no such thing as vigilantism in Islam. It has to be done officially. There has to be a judge, and there has to be a system, right?
But if you do so, like just like you said, if you follow the law of the land, but if you do so, it means like you are not believing in the hadith and the sunnah and the sharia that Quran and Muhammad told us. So like, if you take out the sunnah and the hadith from Islam, actually Islam is left nothing. There's nothing left in Islam.
So
they cannot separate it.
the reason why these scholars, so particularly my understanding of Islam had a lot to do with what I learned in the West. So for example, the American scholars of Islam, for example, Bilal Phillips, Hamza Yusuf, and these people. So what I was taught was that the Wahhabi, let's say the Wahhabi version of Islam taught me that apostates should be killed in an Islamic state. So if there's an Islamic state that exists, which there isn't, but if there was, then in that state, it would be the law that you cannot leave Islam. And if you do leave Islam, then you are given the chance to repent and to come back to Islam. This is the hardline Wahhabi one. Now, obviously, Hamza Yusuf and his sheikh, they take a different approach altogether. What they say is that the goals of Sharia are to preserve lineage, to preserve life, and to preserve wealth. These are the maqasid of the Sharia, the goals of Sharia. And they say apostasy law is actually, like blasphemy law, killing people for leaving Islam is actually harming Islam. It's actually making Islam weaker, and it's actually causing more people to leave Islam. So, and they actually are arguing that we don't need these hudud punishments anymore. We don't need these laws, not because we don't agree with what Muhammad did, but because what Muhammad did might have made sense in that context, in that time, in that place. But there are things that don't make it fit anymore in today's time, right? So they say, for example, if you look at, for example, there's even a hadith of that Prophet said, don't let your garment, you know, drag behind you, right? And if whatever drags behind you is in the hellfire, the izar, right? And then Abu Bakr came and he said to Muhammad, well, I do this. Like, I have a long robe and I like to be beautiful. And Muhammad said to him that you're not doing it out of pride. So Muslim scholars, some of them will say, well, look at the root cause, the root reason. And many of the Muslim scholars will say it's because the Islamic State, they considered apostasy as treason, meaning you're going against the government. That you're going against the state. Now, I don't agree. Yes. I don't agree with that. I personally think it's not justifiable to kill someone for leaving the faith, even if the faith is connected to the state or whatever like that. But my only point is that Muslims themselves are saying that this doesn't apply because this is for treason, not just for leaving the faith. So now, you know, Muslims can interpret things however they want. If we are not Muslim, we have to admit that it's all man-made and that one interpretation is obviously better for human beings, and the other interpretation is not. But I don't think it's fair to say that one of them is Islam and one is not Islam, because they're both scholarly interpretations of the religion themselves. It's just that, you know, we might think okay, one of them is not as true to the text or whatever.
But you can see, like, the majority of the people, like the majority of the Muslims, they are following the wrong one, not the right one. Like, they should not follow that one. They should follow the other one. So it makes problems.
Yeah, there's definitely a problem with the Muslims in general, in that if they believe in these things, like, you know, apostasy law, and if they believe these are things that we should bring back, then this is obviously very bad, right? And I'm hoping that...
Just... Yes.
Go ahead.
I want to ask you a question. Like... So you are from you are from Kenya, but your parents are from Pakistan, right?
No, my parents.
India.
Yeah, if you go back like to my great grandparents, they'd be from like Jamnagar and Gujarat area.
Okay, cool. So Gujarat, well, it's near to my province actually. It's really near. So we have a Gujarati people there. So I want to say to you that people like in Pakistan was part of India. And you should understand, like, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran, these countries, they were really not Muslims. How did they become Muslims? Can you answer, like, they become Muslims through Dawah, like Shabir Ali, or maybe someone came there to Dawah? No, it's not true. They became Muslims on the spot, you know? They were forced. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, mass conversion. There was like hundreds and thousands of people, they were converted to Islam, and they don't have any choice because the Hindus, they are not Ahlul Kitab. Hindus are not Ahlul Kitab, so they don't have to give jizya. They just have die or become Muslim, like this. So they don't have any other way, and they become Muslim. So, like, Pakistan, and you know, this created a lot of problem, like the country, the culture, even if you go back to Pakistan, we have a lot of things in common with Indians, like the way we drink, the way we eat, the way we dress and everything. But still, the problem is coming from Islam. It's creating problems. It was the reason the country was divided. It was the reason many people were killed. Like, it was the main reason. So, who is the main culprit? I think, for me, Islam is the main culprit.
Like, I definitely think that there's a lot of, like, let's say, toxic ideas that are taught as Islam, toxic interpretations or toxic versions of Islam that are quite awful. Definitely the whole idea of jihad is a big part of Islam to some people, Sunni Muslims. And that idea is something that, again, like people like Hamza Yusuf has said, we don't need to look at it that way anymore. But many people still obviously believe that Islam is something that needs to be spread by jihad, by dawah. I do know there's examples as well, like Indonesia, where people were converted peacefully to, like, you know, Dawah or whatever. But obviously, yeah, jihad is one of the things that, you know, that we would like to just go away, right?
Yeah, but like, what I think is that, like, those people who think they are peaceful right now, but it's my belief that if they are majority, if the Muslims are a majority, they will not become peaceful. They will not be that thing anymore. They will change. Mm. That's my belief. But like Hijab, Muhammad Hijab, and like the debaters like Najib Quraishi, Najib Chaudhry, what is his name, and Ahmad, like all these people, when they are in America, when they are in UK, they speak like, oh, Islam is really peaceful, and Muhammad did not do this and everything. But really, they just want to lure people. They just want to attract the people. They want to attract Western people to come and accept Islam and accept Muslims. But this is not in their hearts. I think so. But like, if they were in majority, the things will be different. They want to take Sharia and all this stuff to Western. You know, the good thing about Western countries, about America and about UK, is that we can sit down and talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you think, and we can talk. But in Islam, back in my country, back in Pakistan, I'm not allowed to talk. I'm not allowed to ask questions against Islam. If I ask questions, they will kill me.
Yeah.
So this is not in my case. Like many people, like recently, maybe six or one year ago, there was a guy in Pakistan. He was a university student.
Mashallah.
He was in his college. Yeah, he was killed.
Yeah.
Only because he said something like he don't believe in Muhammad and all this stuff, and he was killed.
Yeah.
And this thing is very common in Pakistan, and Christians especially. I would say like Christians in Pakistan, they are like third class citizens. Like, they treat Christians as like dirt.
Mm.
And if, for example, if a Christian drinks in your cup, they will throw the cup away. They will not drink in the same cup anymore.
Wow.
It's like this. And they really hate them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very unfortunate. Which is why I think, you know, secularism and liberalism is something good that we have come up with as humanity. Because as long as you don't have like one religion over another, you know, and hopefully with democracy, everybody has the same rights, right? So you don't have one over the other. Because even in history under Christianity, there was a lot of oppression of Jews, right? There was a lot of anti-Semitism. So like what we find is, even in China, for example, China is oppressing the Uyghur people and the bulldozing the mosques, the forcing them to eat pork. So this is like if we are against people forcing, and China is another country that, for example, bans like a lot of free speech, right? Like you can actually go to jail if you talk about certain topics. So it's not limited to Islam. Like this repressive idea.
Yeah, you talk about China. Like, let me say something about China. Google is blocked.
Be careful.
YouTube is blocked. Okay, it doesn't matter. Google is blocked. YouTube is blocked. Twitter is blocked. And like Facebook is blocked. Like all the Western and all the foreign website we use most of the time, they are blocked here. You cannot even watch videos, movies. You cannot watch. Netflix is blocked. So it's everything is blocked here.
If they want you to use the local services, I guess? They want like the own Chinese brands to be popular?
No, it's not really the reason. It's actually the foreign, like YouTube and Google, they show some information that they Chinese government don't want their people to see. So, like, there's some information on the internet, like, there was some protest against the government of China, and they really don't want their people to know the real face of their government, so they just censor it.
Okay.
They just want to stop it.
Oh, I see.
It's like that.
So
we used to,
so definitely yes. we find that these bad ideas, like, so freedom of speech is something very good. Liberalism is something very good, like, you know, allowing people to speak their mind, allowing people to believe what they want, you know, whether they want to be Christian or whether they want to be Muslim or whether they want to be atheist or Jewish or whatever, Hindu, like,
it's everyone, my choice, right?
Yeah, definitely there's a lot of bad things in the Islamic texts, which I think we need to, I hope that Muslims will acknowledge this one day, and they are, you know, to some level, like I said, a lot of Western Muslims. I don't know about Muhammad Hijab and these guys, but what I do know, what I will tell you is that what I've seen as for Muslims in the West, anyways, not in Pakistan, is that many, if not most of the Muslims, don't care about Islamic law. All they care about is they want to pray five times a day, they want to go to the mosque, they want to... But this is my experience, so let me just share what I find. So, for example,
those are Americans, American Muslims.
Yes.
They are not real Muslims, actually.
Well, they are real Muslims, so, because if you looked at...
I know, like if you say... Yeah, if you bring an American Muslim in Pakistan, the Pakistani Muslim and the Arabian Muslim, they say this is not a real Muslim. He's not, you know.
Well,
they'll say yalla.
Yeah, whether people judge them as real Muslims or not does not take away from the fact that they see themselves as Muslim. And for example, me, even me, like I used to pray five times a day. I was a conservative Muslim. I would never ever think of killing my son or that any of my kids or any of my wife or whatever. Like, When I myself left Islam, it was kind of surprising because I used to be the conservative Muslim, but I never thought about killing anybody. Like, that wasn't part of my belief. And I wasn't a bad Muslim for that. It was just that I didn't see that as part of Islam because it wasn't part of the context of what was applicable to me as a Muslim living in that context, right? So, for example, and this is what I find about most Muslims living here. They go for Jummah on Friday. They pray, they eat, they do Roza or fasting, but they don't care about Islamic law. Like, if they had to live under Islamic law, they would probably want to come back to Canada because they wouldn't like it themselves. Like, I even had friends who lived in Egypt, and like, I don't like it there. I want to live in Canada. And they actually told me, you can be a better Muslim in Canada than you can be a better Muslim in Egypt. Because in Egypt, you can go to jail if you have a beard. Yes.
I want to share something like with you. Like, people, when they are in Pakistan, they are not really religious, like some of my friends, but when they move towards UK or USA, I don't know what happened to them. They suddenly start five times a day a prayer and they become Muslim. This happens. I don't know why.
Well, because it's identity, like, right? Like, when you're a minority and you find something to latch onto and something to connect you with other people, and now you have like a purpose and you now have some like shared, you know, a community to connect with, someone that, you know, you after school you need help, someone will come and help you, and you know, you get like a big brother and big sister, stuff like that. So obviously religion, like, you know, you converted to Christianity, obviously there's some benefits from the community, there's some benefits for having a sort of you know, like basically community and, you know, spiritual benefits as well. So I think they latch onto it. That's what that's one of the things that happens when you're a minority in a bigger non-Muslim society, right?
Oh no! In China, actually, you know, it's also not good for Christians here.
Yeah.
They Chinese. They are against religion. Actually, they burn the churches. They burn the Bibles here.
Wow.
So it's not like in China. Also, it's not really. To be a Christian in China is not really good, actually. It's not one of the best places. So it doesn't matter, but...
Yeah, so we got kind of caught up in this debate, but we didn't get to finish your story. So what ended up happening to you? So you had to run away from Pakistan then, or...?
Yeah, like, my mother supported me, and some friends, they helped me to get the visa, and because my wife was Chinese, it helped me a lot. So we just came back, and... when we are here, but like my father is like he always tries to like contact me because I have deleted his all information from my phone. So what he do is like he has some people here in China who know me, but he don't tell me, and those people don't tell me who they are. But through them, he like inquires about me, and I don't know how, but he always. Giving me threats, and one day, like I received a threat in my mail, and it says like, "Be a Muslim again, or you shall die."
Wow.
and for my mail, that mail has my address in there, and I was like, "What? I just came here in China, and no one knows my address. How the hell they figured it out?
Wow!
How the hell they figured it out?" And they are, I don't know, actually, I really don't know how they really, like, know these things. I can't understand, but really, like, my life as a Christian in China is like every day I'm really afraid. Maybe today something will happen to me, and maybe this is the reason. Like, all of the time, maybe majority of the time, I'm in the home. I'm in the house. I don't go outside because I'm really afraid of that. So I just pray that these things might not be happen, and my son should grow up, and he has his own choice, and he should not go back to Pakistan. That's a hell. I don't like it. So I just want to... So this was the main reason, actually. I wanted to have a conversation with you on live with YouTube, that because if someday, if God forbid, something happens to me, people should know what I was doing, and people should know that what I was being through, and what was my journey, and why did it happen. Not like if something happened to me and people even don't know why did it happen. So I just wanted to make this video for with the help of yours. Thank you for your help, and that was all reason. Yes.
Yeah, it was. You know, we need to hear these things. We need to know, like, these bad ideas need to be exposed. People need to understand, like, how difficult it is, especially for Pakistani ex-Muslims. Are you able to stay in China now for as long as you need to? Do you have a?
Yeah, I got a spouse visa. It's like because my wife is Chinese, but in China they have like different rules. Like, if your wife is Chinese, but you cannot work here legally.
Wow.
So like. Yeah, I don't know. They are crazy, but like
strange. Yeah,
yeah. You're gonna work here, but you can be with her as long as she wants. So as long as my wife wants, I can be with her 5 years, 10 years, doesn't matter. But I legally cannot work here. She can work, but I cannot work. It's not like in America. If you marry an American citizen, you get the citizenship and you can work. It's not like there, and they have like in China. It's like. They really don't want foreigners to work here and earn Chinese money and like this. I don't know. They have different thinking. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to add one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
To the Muslims who left Islam, these people who are ex-Muslims, they are actually really smart people. For me, actually, from my experience, all those people I have met who left Islam, they're really smart. And all the dumb people who really don't understand and who really don't want to listen, they are like they are keep against Islam. They don't want to leave it. They don't
want to
think about it. Yeah, close-minded, conservative. You know.
Go ahead, Sai.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sai. I didn't think you were finished. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So people like. For example, you left Islam, you are a smart guy, and one of my friend, he is from Tunisia, it's a Muslim country, his name is Sheriff Yusuf, so that guy, he's also an atheist, so he told me like, in his country, only people who really have, who have a university degree and they know about, you know, they are smart enough, they leave Islam, and those people who are dumb, they don't want to leave Islam.
So I actually completely disagree with you.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because what I've seen is there's very intelligent Christians. Oh, you are a Christian too, but there's very intelligent people of all religions. People that don't necessarily agree. So how do I say this? The way that people do it is they in their mind, they do what's called cognitive dissonance. So they're able to hold two opposing ideas at the same time. So they're able to, like, for example, say that, okay, Islam says these things, but they don't make sense, but I'm going to believe that. But also everything else in their life, they're intelligent, but they're not able to let go of the brainwashing or basically the psychological conditioning that happened to them, usually as a child. So because as a child, they were programmed with this fear of hell. A lot of them, they just cannot let go of this fear of hell. They're just like, okay, was that difficult for you though?
I want to change.
Yeah.
No, I want to change my statement. Mm-hmm. Not smart, but maybe open-minded people, open to new ideas. Yes, sorry. Okay. Yes, that was a wrong word. Sorry for that. Really, the people who have open-minded and those who have courage enough to change their lives and their ideology. They want to change their ideology. Those people might leave Islam, but not all those people who don't have courage to leave their ideology.
You definitely need some courage in order to let go of what you were taught, you know, what you believed all your life, right? Whatever you believe, whatever you're doing. So definitely want to say thank you to everyone who joined us for the conversation. We should do a follow-up with you, like maybe in a month or 2 months or 6 months, whenever you feel comfortable, just to give an update how things are going in your life. If you feel like it, let me know. We can do that again. I also want to say for whoever's watching live, I have a conversation with Dr. Yu Ross. He's a Christian apologist, and we are going to be talking about Christianity. So today, you did talk about a few things. You mentioned a few things about Christianity. I didn't really want to debate with you because this is definitely your story, and I wanted you to share your story, to talk about how difficult it was leaving Islam, how difficult it is for you to have your father, you know, try to tell you that he will kill you and all that stuff. And I didn't want to take away from that by debating Christianity, because that's not the point of this conversation.
We can do that debate later, maybe somebody else.
And I have, I'm going to be talking to a scholar, like a theologian, Dr. Yep. Ross, on that topic, and he specializes in it. So I'd love to discuss with him.
Okay, so it's just a follow-up, right away you will follow up that?
That's next week. That's next Thursday, 1 week from now.
Next week. Okay, I will watch it.
So whoever's not subscribed, please subscribe to the channel, and
I'm subscribed.
Thank you.
I'm subscribed.
Thank you. Anything else you want to add then before we end it?
I just want to say all of the viewers here, and just pray for me. And if you're not an atheist, but if you are believe in God, so just pray for me and for my family and for my safety and for my life. And I will pray for you all, guys, and I pray for Abdullah brother, who helped me to share my story with you guys. And I'm really happy for that. And may God bless Abdullah brother and his family and his friends. God bless you all.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And it is probably close to 3 o'clock in the morning now in China, so we'll let you go. Thanks. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to do this. We'll talk to you again some other time. Take care. Okay, thanks everyone.
See you. I can't understand what?
I'm just saying, okay, I'm going to end.